Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So I am your guest today. I will be talking about a few things I've been wanting to get to you on. And I just had an opportunity to speak at a local company that asked me to come in and do what some people call like a lunch and learn. And I do a little talk, and they had sandwiches and a salad. It was nice. And somebody bought my lunch for a change, which is very nice. So I wanted to share with you something I thought would be helpful. And it's fresh, and it's something I just did. So I love to answer everyday questions. So these are some of the questions they had, and I'm going to answer them like I did when I did their talk. And I think it'll be helpful. And then I've got a few other things to get to today. So let me just jump right in here. I asked them to give me some of the questions they had on their mind. And here are some of them. First of all, this particular employer has a 401k plan that the employees can access. So if you are an employee of a company and they make a 401k available, of course, you should participate. And the question that was asked is, well, I have the 401k plan. I'm put some money in, but they offer a match. And, you know, should I stretch myself to put in enough money to get all of the match? And the short answer is yes. If you can get there, do it. For example, this employer offered a match up to 4%. So if the employees put in the required amount, then they would get an additional 4% added to their account. And I asked the people that were listening to do my talk, what kind of return is that they're earning on that money? And they kind of all threw out a bunch of different answers. And I said, well, the actual correct answer is 100%. Because if you put in 4% and they match you 4, well, you're getting 100% on your money. So if you have the opportunity with your employer to match, to have money put in and then they match you dollar for dollar, or even if they put on 50 cents on the dollar and it requires you to put in 6% to get 3, do it. Unless you are in dire financial straits, you should really take advantage of that. And the thing that's interesting about doing 401k contributions is because it comes out pre-tax, before your income taxes are calculated, you may not feel as much of a deduction as you otherwise would. And that money doesn't go into your account. Maybe you don't spend it and you're automatically investing for retirement. And the other nice thing about that is that you're putting that in every paycheck, every 2 weeks or twice a month, whatever it is, and you're doing what we call automatic dollar cost averaging. You say, well, what's that? Dollar cost averaging is putting in systematically a set dollar amount per month or per week or whatever it is. And then as you put that money in, you buy shares or, you know, percentage of stock, mutual funds, whatever are available in the 401k plan. Well, what's interesting about that is that when the market goes down, you know, we all want the market to go up forever, right? But when the market goes down, as it will, even when it's going up nicely, it looks like it's building up a nice head of steam, it is still going to pull back at times for a bunch of different reasons. And when that happens, that money you're putting in goes into the 401k, and guess what it does? It buys more shares. So ironically, if you're putting money into a 401k plan, you don't necessarily want that market to go up too quickly because you're buying at more expensive levels. Now, you don't want to try to time that because that's very, very difficult to do with an investment account and even harder to do with a 401k. So if you've got the opportunity, put money into that 401k, take advantage of the match, and that will serve you well. And I've seen it in my own personal situation when I have made contributions both for working for somebody else, which seems like forever ago, but 16, 17 years ago, but even with my own 401k plan at my company, the contributions I put in, you know, I put in my contributions every paycheck. And when the market's down, you know, your account falls a little bit. And then, but since you've been putting all that money in every, you know, every paycheck, then all of a sudden when the market goes back up, your account just goes whoop, kind of just pops out. You say, wow, how'd that happen? Well, you were buying lower, and then the values of what were in there also suppressed. And then when the market comes back up, it jumps up in value. So that was a great question that one of the employees asked. Another important question. Well, you know what? Lisa's saying it's time for a break. I'm going to take a quick break. I'll come right back and I'll talk about how to know or what to do to start the planning process with your finances for retirement. Stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, so I'm back, and let me share what I'm talking about with the idea of starting the planning process. What does that mean? You know, you say, well, I don't know where to start. Maybe you're early in your career, or you just got out of college, or you've got a new job, or you've gone back to the workforce, or maybe you've had a later life divorce and you've gone back to work, or a whole bunch of different, or you just got an inheritance, which was one of the other questions. I'll get to that if I can. All kinds of questions. Wherever you're starting out, the most important thing you can do is pay attention. Read as much as you can in magazines and newspaper. Always remember what you're reading and where you're reading it, though, and consider the objectivity of the source. If you're reading it in a magazine, consider the magazine advertisers. If you're reading it in a paper, look at the advertisers. You know, make sure there's no bias. But start out that way. And what you do, if you have access, like I talked about earlier, to a 401k account, put money in. Start exposing yourself just to different things and becoming more knowledgeable. And of course, you know I'm going to say this. One of the most important things you do is find a good quality advisor that you can work with, and preferably somebody that's not going to retire themselves anytime soon, and ask them to help you. And a lot of advisors will help you right where you are. You don't have to have $1 billion to get financial advice. In fact, one of the women, she asked me a question at this lunch and learn I talked about earlier, and she said, you know, I've got different accounts. I don't know, when do I come see you? And I said, well, tell me a little bit about what you're doing. And she just started describing her situation and started mentioning these different accounts. And I'm doing the math in my head. And she's got over $200,000 and she's not really getting any attention. And I said to her, I said, you know what? You've got enough money that you deserve. Your money deserves some attention. And many advisors are happy to work with somebody that has money like that. And a lot will let you start out by putting money in every month, making ongoing contributions. So that's a big part, though, about figuring out this whole world of finance, this other language called Finglish, is to find somebody you can trust to help you. Now, what else do you do when you say, okay, where do I start? Well, one of the other things I talk about often, and you may have heard me talk about it on this show, but I don't think you can hear this too often, and that is that there are steps you take in kind of getting your financial house in order, and I call it my David's 5 Steps to Financial Freedom, and I'll go through them quickly. Number one, you need to have cash on hand. I'm not talking about a rule of thumb either of, oh, well, 3 months or 6 months. Those are good starting points. But what you want to do is look at your own individual circumstances and situation and think about what can go wrong. And then add up all those things that can go wrong, the deductible on the car, the something happens to your home or the condo, or if you're renting, what are the different things that can happen? And figure out what a real cash emergency fund should be. And so before you invest, before you pay off any debt, before you buy the greatest, best investment ever somebody's offering you, make sure you've got cash. Then make sure you've got the proper insurances, because if you don't, things can get really bad. Make sure you've got health insurance. Make sure you've got long-term care insurance. If you're over 50, I generally recommend that. Make sure you've got disability insurance. If you're working and you have a good income and you need to protect that income, a lot of employers will offer a group plan. If not, buy it yourself individually. Statistics say that a lot of folks would be more likely to be disabled than to die, but they have life insurance but no disability insurance, even though the one is more likely than the other. Next up, look at your debt. If you've got high interest debt, you need to pay that off before you even think about investing. What about credit cards? What about car loans? All those things. Well, if you're paying 0% financing on the car loan, that's fine. That's good. That's a low interest rate. Obviously, zero is low. Can't get any lower than that. But you're still making the payment. You know, it's not 0% payment. It's 0% financing. So you want to start with the highest debt first and make extra payments toward the highest interest rate debt. Then when you pay that off, take that extra payment plus the minimum you were paying on that one and move it to the next one, and so on and so on and so forth till you pay it all off. Now, if you've got a mortgage that's 2%, okay, maybe you don't pay that off. But, 5, 6%, that's in today's interest rate environment, that's a high interest rate. Pay it off. Make extra payments because you're basically paying yourself that higher rate. There's nothing on the planet right now that's going to give you a guaranteed 6% or even 5% interest that is risk-free. And by paying off debt, what are you doing? You're in effect paying it off risk-free, right? So that's the next one. After that, income. If you are working, you can skip this step. Investing for income is unnecessary when you're working and you've got the income from your employment. But if you're retired or about to retire, you want to look at things that you invest in that's going to produce income. And after you've established that, or if you're skipping this step, if you're still working, then you look to invest. So in my 5 steps to financial freedom, we're not talking about investing until the 5th step, talking about something in the stock market and maybe something that is more income oriented in the 4th step. There's these other things that are important to do before you get to that point. You say, well, David, you're a financial planner. You do investing. Yes, but not prematurely. Okay. And I've had plenty of meetings with people where I've told them, you don't need me yet. Here's what you need to do. You need to pay off this mortgage, or you need to pay off this credit card, or we need to look at a reverse mortgage or something. Do those things and then we'll talk. All right. Take another quick break and we'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. One of the other questions I got in my recent little talk with a local employer for their employees, and if there's any employers out there listening, you want me to come and talk to one of your employee groups, give them some financial coaching at lunch, you buy and I'll come over. Okay, you buy lunch and I'll be happy to come. One of the other questions I got was a person just inherited money, and her question is, what do I do? That's a great question. You inherit. In fact, this is the second person. I had a lady come in the other day who inherited money from a long-lost uncle. You know, you've heard those stories. Well, it really happened to her. And it actually was an amazing story. It totally changed her life. And now we're planning on what to do with that money. So when you get an inheritance, first of all, try to keep it quiet, especially if it's a significant amount for your situation. If you've got $1 million and you inherit $50,000, that's not really changing your life. But if you've got 50 and you inherit $1 million, then you need to keep that quiet. And you need to only reveal that to a few people that are closest to you. And then, of course, seek out professional advice to guide you. This one woman, we're guiding her with, okay, we're going to get you an attorney. We're going to help her with getting a house because she doesn't have a house. We're helping her with, she wanted me to recommend a dentist. She wanted me to recommend just different insurance agent, all these different things that she's going to need that she hadn't done yet. So find somebody that can guide you. And what you'll do is go through this process I just talked about, these steps. So you know, if you don't have long-term care insurance and you're in your 60s and you've inherited money, I'm going to tell you, you need to look to make sure you've got long-term care taken care of. I'm going to ask about debt. Are there any gifts you want to make? Let's talk about that. You know, sometimes when people come into a lot of money, they want to make a gift to other people. That's wonderful. But let's do that within the context of a plan and say, I've decided I'm comfortable. And of course, the financial planner can confirm this for you. I'm comfortable giving away 10% of what I've gotten. And so, okay, where's that go? Family, friends, charities, church, whatever may be the case. So when you do have this happen, and it's going to happen to a lot of people over the next 20 years, trillions with a T, trillions of dollars are going to go from what we call the mature generation to the baby boom generation. Those born between 1946 and 1964 are the baby boom generation. And there are 70 million of them, and they are going to inherit trillions of dollars. So this is going to be a common thing. So if you get an inheritance, talk to an advisor about that. Other questions I received. How do I make the retirement transition? I love this question, and I'll use an analogy. Yes, you can use the rule of 100. That's a great way to start. Take 100, subtract your age, and that tells you how much money should be at risk and how much should not be at risk. You're 70. 70% should not be on the roulette table, okay? 70% needs to be somewhere else. Money market, CDs, fixed annuities, things that are more secure and safe and that you can rely on and not lose sleep. And then the other 30% can be more at risk. But the analogy is you're on a trip. Let's say you got 100 miles to drive on the interstate. Well, you set your cruise control, you get up to whatever comfortable driving speed that you want to do, and then you sit back and you go. You do that until you get closer to your destination. Then you do what? You move from the left lane to the right if you're not already there. Turn on your turn signal, of course, before you do that. You click the cruise control off. You tap the brakes. You start slowing down. And then you make your exit gracefully. You do that instead of waiting to the last minute and having to yank the wheel hard to cut across multiple lanes of traffic, hurting you and other people. And that is a great analogy for retirement planning. So if you are 30, you know, you could be much more aggressive than perhaps you should be when you're 60. But I actually recommend people start thinking about that, moving into that right lane when they're in their 50s. Now, I didn't say move all the way over and cause problems by going 2 miles an hour on the interstate. I'm saying you make them shift over. And these are general rules. Everybody's situation is going to be different. But make that shift over. Maybe you're not 100% in the market anymore when you're 50. Maybe you're, you know, maybe you're that 50-50 or 70-30. You can still be in things that have potential for growth, but just not quite so aggressive. So that is how you make the transition. And having different situations obviously affects people. If you have a pension or other things, that's going to affect that decision. If you're expecting a large inheritance, like I talked about earlier, that can make a big difference. Your marital situation makes a big difference. All those things. So those are some of the things to think about when you're trying to figure out when to make that retirement transition. We'll take another break and I'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
And we're back. Okay, so let me talk about a couple more things with you. One of the other things that I've had a question about recently is not just a question. I've seen some situations where people have messed this up. And we all try to do as well as we can, but we make mistakes. It happens, okay? And I've had a couple of situations recently involving IRA withdrawals, 401k withdrawals, and two in particular come to mind. And I'm going to give you a website that I'm going to reference called moneychimp.com. That's an easy site to remember, moneychimp.com. And actually, it's really easy, and I go in and use it all the time. Lisa's laughing at me over here. But really, I do. I go in. I mean, I have access to some pretty fancy software. But a lot of times when I'm working with people, I'll go to this little MoneyChimp website, and it's nice and easy because it lets me go in and do a quick and dirty, quick and easy calculation of income and the impact of taking money out of your IRA. So, for example, I'm working with a client right now who needs to take some money out of their IRA. And we're doing some calculations. And so I can go in and say, okay, you've already got, say, $50,000 of income from other sources. And we're looking at taking another amount out of their IRA. And so we're looking at, well, if you do that, what kind of tax bracket is that going to put you into? Well, if we look at tax brackets, you know, the first for 2013, and I'm going to use single, the first 0 to 9,000 is 10% bracket. Then 9,000 to 36 is 15% bracket. 36 to 87 is 25% bracket. Then we get over that, then it starts to going up 28, 33, 35, 39.6. And then even the extra income tax of another 3.8 because of the healthcare law. So when we start looking at those brackets, let's say, like I gave you the example, somebody has $50,000 of income. Well, they already have blown through the first two brackets. So some of their money is going to be subject to 10% tax. Some of it's going to be subject to 15. And then they're going to have about another 15,000 subject to the 25% bracket. But they could take another $27,000, $28,000 out of their IRA and still be in the same 25% bracket. So one of the things that people do when they have IRAs and they have some flexibility on taking money out and maybe, you know, they don't have to take it to live, but they want to take it out maybe to do something else or maybe to look at taxes and minimizing taxes. Taxes are not going to be less in the future. I would find it very surprising if we ever have taxes as low as we've had more recently. In fact, I think they're going to go up even more at some point. So with that said, if we can deliberately take some of your IRA money or 401k money out on purpose, more than you're required to take out, and take that out and deliberately expose it to a tax bracket that, you know, your threshold for paying, expose it to that 25% bracket, that's a good thing because it's going to be taxed higher later. And so then take that money, reinvest it or whatever. So I find that kind of moneychimp.com, go in there and you can play around with how much money you take out, because very often people, they don't realize that when they take a large amount out of a 401k or an IRA, 403b, 457, they're all the same under the tax code for taking it out. You're going to pay ordinary income tax. When you do that, you take a large amount out in 1 year, well, guess what's going to happen to my little calculation? If you take, you know, an extra $100,000 out and you already have $50,000 of income, now that's thrown you into the 28% bracket. And if you take, say, 200 out, now you're into the 33. You see how? And that's, you don't ever get that back. They don't give you credit in the future for having paid at a higher bracket this year. You pay at a lower bracket later. Each year stands on its own as it relates to the tax bracket that you're in. So you don't pay it forward or prepay. And so we want to be careful. And I had this happen one time to a woman. Her husband had died, and she had gotten some, I'll call it quick advice, and it wasn't the best advice. She had gotten life insurance money, and she inherited an IRA. She took the IRA, liquidated it to pay the house off, and then was going to keep the money from the life insurance to pay herself an income. The exact opposite of what she should do. So the life insurance should be used to pay off the mortgage and then draw the IRA over time to give her income. All right, I'm out of time. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.